Well, we're very, very thankful that Brother Mark and Sister Vicky could come out. Brother Mark's going to serve us for the second service of the convention. And he's entitled his remarks, The Cries of the Reapers. The Cries of the Reapers. Brother Mark.
And Brother Ryan, I share in those sentiments of gratitude. As I was coming to the podium, for some reason I couldn't help be reminded of Brother Dom Destro. I'm not sure how many knew Brother Dom. And he would come up about now and pick a name out of the audience. Brother Joe, isn't it a great day?
Yes.
Isn't it great to be here? I mean, what a way to bring out one year and bring in another year. And we continue to be very, very grateful to Brother George and Sister Florence for their family-like hospitality. We will miss them. And I'd imagine it must be a problem for them once they get brethren in their house to get them to leave. Luciano Pavarotti said, one of the very nicest things about life is the way we must regularly stop whatever it is we are doing and devote our attention to eating. You know, our lunch menu today included vegetable barley soup. Probably many of the vegetables were grown locally here in Illinois. And the barley may be from the Kansas area, maybe from Nebraska, maybe even from Canada. Turkey sandwich with bread made from wheat from the Dakotas. Again, maybe the Midwest of the United States. Turkey maybe from the Chesapeake area. Fruit maybe from Washington State or California. Coffee from South America. Yesterday, potatoes maybe from Maine and Idaho. And the French rolls from France. I don't know. But where did it all come from? You know, if you ask a child today where milk comes from, too often their response is a carton. And if by chance you're fortunate enough to get a more sophisticated response, the answer may be the grocery store. And I'm concerned. There's a calamity brewing in this country and in the world that I believe is worthy of observation. Before we go directly to it, let me try to put my concern into perspective. And I'm going to use a totally unrelated verse, and that's 1 Thessalonians 4:13. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. See, we sorrow when we lose a loved one. We mourn, but not as the world would mourn, because we know God's plan. We have the hope of the resurrection and the kingdom. And although we mourn and we sorrow, it's not with that anxiety that the rest of the world has. So now taking the same view with this issue, I am concerned. I'm not worried. I'm not anxious because we know God's plan. We have the hope of the resurrection and the promises of God's kingdom. Yet I'm concerned about the future of our agriculture, and the role it plays in this period, the period we're now living in, of God's divine plan. See, there is this dilemma that's brewing, and it could have monumental effect and consequences. And as most of the events of this time occur subtly, almost imperceptibly, people, maybe even ourselves, don't see it coming. I thought it particularly fitting to deal with this topic while in Chicago, the gateway to the heartland, the home of the great stockyards, that we consider the role of agriculture in God's plan. And I'm always awed by how God must be a great cook, a great chef, to prepare this spiritual meal with so many different topics and have it come out so right. We were not assigned a topic, but between Brother John, Brother Jerry, and Brother Len, they fit together. Remember the story of the five blind men and the elephant? Each were trying to describe the elephant from a different perspective. I appreciated Brother Len's discussion of this economic situation that we have. And I'm going to be looking at one aspect of that, one perspective. So whether it's the side or the tail, but we're just going to take one piece of that, and that is the role of agriculture in this scenario that's unfolding. I'm not sure if you know that my second job, my first job, I hope, is to be about my father's business, but for most of the past 29 years, my second job is teaching high school students about agriculture, trying to prepare them for careers in animal science. Many of us view the scriptures and the prophecies from our own perspective. From mine, I see American agriculture is heading into a crisis. And for the next 45 minutes, I'd like to remind you of and help you to begin to bring the content of Brother Russell's writings to the present. But before we go immediately to the content, again, if you have a piece of paper and you'd like to be involved, I have a little agricultural quiz for you just to see where you might stand. There's going to be 10 questions. Question number one. They should be pretty one-word answers. What do we call a female sheep? What do we call a female sheep? Number two, what do you call young female swine? Pigs, young female pigs. Three, at what age would a beef animal be harvested for meat? Now, actually, you may be thinking I'm picking some of the more obscure questions, and that's really not the case. I'm picking fairly fundamental if you're involved with agriculture, and I'm going to pick them from the different areas of agriculture. Number four, of all of the water on the Earth's surface, what percentage is fresh water? Number five, what is the most abundant element in our atmosphere? Number six, what do the letters PTO stand for on a tractor? Number seven, if green tractors are John Deere, what are blue tractors? There could be a couple of answers. Number eight, what do we call diseases that can travel from animals to humans or vice versa? Repeat, what do we call diseases that can travel from animals to humans or vice versa? Number nine, what kind of wood do we harvest from deciduous trees? And number 10, what type of digestive tracts do cattle have? Stewardship. There's something I really like about the word and concept of stewardship. There's something I personally connect with in the word. I believe Jesus embraced and modeled the concept of stewardship. A steward is one who takes care of something that belongs to someone else. A babysitter is a steward. A babysitter takes care of the child that belongs to someone else. Mankind was made the steward of the earth. The church is the steward of the truth, one who takes care of something that belongs to someone else. The words used in the scriptures, a couple of places, Genesis 15:2, and Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. Or in Luke 12:42, and the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household to give them their portion of meat in due season? Man by design was the steward of the earth. Then by definition, who did or does the earth belong to? Well, it belongs to all of us. It belongs to other organisms and creatures of God's creation. It belongs to others, and particularly to those not yet born, to our ancestors. See, in Genesis 1, 26 through 28, and God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. And God blessed them and said unto them, "Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." And the Lord God took the man and put him into the garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. See, the task of dominion over the earth for a long time may have seemed simple and risk-free. Our perception of the environment was infinite, that we could take from it all that we wanted and that we could dump into it all and anything we wanted. And we felt it would just keep giving and absorbing. Virtually, we survive in a band of life called the biosphere. It measures only a few miles above sea level and only a few feet into the crust, to a point where organisms as complex as humans could survive. In other terms, if the earth were the size of a basketball, we would survive in a band that is similar to the skin. But now, with 7 billion people, and that number doubling roughly every 60 years, and energy consumption as it never was, we are escalating a problem that is seemingly taking on a life of its own. Jacques Cousteau warned, "We must alert and organize the world's people to put pressure on world leaders to take specific steps to solve the two root causes of our environmental crisis, exploding population growth and wasteful consumption of irreplaceable resources. Overconsumption and overpopulation underlie every environmental problem we face today." In 1897, 115 years ago, Brother Russell wrote Volume 4 of the Studies in the Scriptures, The Battle of Armageddon. He cited the dilemma of the production agriculturalist, the farmer, as one of the elements that would usher in the time of the end. Describing the Battle of Armageddon, this is a description. The Battle of Armageddon focuses the Bible prophecy on momentous world events. Written in 1897, it explains the direction and power of the fomenting revolutionary elements of that era. These were the forces that were to topple the kingdoms of the ending of the Gentile times in 1914. And that will bring down the whole social order. The credibility of this book is increased as the world is drawn relentlessly toward its final battle. This is particularly notable as world leaders exhaust themselves in finding a way out of the irrepressible conflict. Volume 4 focuses on the end of the gospel age. It spends a great deal of time interpreting the book of Revelations for us. Brother Russell points out many weak links in our society that may well be used in the final destruction of our world as we know it. The Lord is allowing the millennial dawn to come upon the world gradually. However, he has also chosen to allow those who have an eye to see, to see. Brother Russell was way ahead of his time in seeing things that may very well lead on to Armageddon, and he noticed such things as changes in agriculture. So in Volume 4, just after the very long chapter dealing with the preparation of the elements, his treatise of the unfolding events as we transition from the present evil days to the millennial kingdom of restoration, Brother Russell then springboards from a series of scriptures in James to write chapter 8, titled The Cries of the Reapers. The chapter expresses his projection of the role of farmers in the end of this age. The chapter starts this way. "The thoughtful student of history, while following our theme and noting the truthfulness of the facts presented, and the reasonableness of the conclusions drawn may still feel uncertain as to the outcome. He may say to himself, the writer forgets that there is in the civilized as well as in the semi-civilized countries a large and predominating social element which is extremely conservative and has always constituted the backbone of society, the farmers. But not so. We have not forgotten this fact, and we recognize its importance. Looking back, we see that Europe would frequently have been thrown into the convulsions of revolution had it not been for this very conservative element. We see that the revolutions in France were chiefly instituted and carried on by the working class of the larger cities, and that the element which finally brought rest and peace was the conservative peasant farmer. So Brother Russell defines who a farmer is. And in 1897, he describes a farmer this way and explains this as part of the characteristics for his previous statement. The reasons for this condition of things are not difficult to find. One, the farmer's life contains less of excitement and social friction. Two, his mind is less drawn to the advantages of wealth, and his ambition for wealth and luxury lies comparatively dormant. He is more or less attached to the soil and learns to depend on it alone, trusting to nature's rewards in return for labor. The measure of education and consequent mental awakening and activity amongst farmers has always heretofore been quite limited. As a result of all these conditions, the farming class of the civilized world has long been pointed to as an example of frugal prosperity and contentment. But as with every other aspect of human life, after 1874 and the return of our Lord and the increase of knowledge, the farmer's situation changed. Today, the farmer is a manager of a multi-million-dollar operation that involves property management, planter production management, human resources or personnel management, resource management, and financial management. It's been written today, quoting, being a successful farmer today requires a knowledge of advanced technology, education, and preparation and business skill. Many farmers learn about the practice of agriculture through training programs at colleges and universities. But still, even 115 years later, Brother Russell's concern continues to be concerned for the loss or change of that conservative element of society, its mainstay, the yeoman farmer that for so long held society stable. He uses James 5, 1 through 4 as his starting point. Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that come upon you. Your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered and the rust of them shall be a witness against you and shall eat your flesh as if it were fire. We have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them that have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts or armies. The largest part of the chapter focuses on one of the issues, and that is the demonetization of silver. Farmers had been comfortably operating within a silver standard economy. Intentionally, yet covertly, a cohort of wealthy businessmen and legislators manipulated a change in legislation which moved the United States to a gold standard. This had a twofold effect on the farmer. It meant their product was immediately worth less, and it meant their loans and borrowed money was more burdensome. The reapers of the world's harvest, the farmers of Christendom, are in distress, notwithstanding modern machinery, and are crying out loudly to fellow citizens and legislators for relief. These cries were stopped temporarily by the rise in the price of wheat. But just as soon as these conditions change and the whole world has its average crops, the price of wheat may follow the price of silver down to, at that time, 43 cents. Except circumstances intervene to alter conditions, the cries of the reapers will ring out in greater desperation than ever. Since 1897, the cries have grown louder, and yet I'm not sure in our success-filled world if we hear them. As was the case throughout the world and throughout all areas of human life, particularly in the civilized world, there was an explosion of knowledge, invention, technology, and advancement. This crescendo is enjoyed equally in the industry of agriculture. Our fundamental source of our food and fiber, our nourishment and cover, we have, for the most part, given it over to someone else to care for. John Henry Fabre wrote, "History celebrates the battlefields whereon we meet our death, but scorns to speak of the plowed fields whereby we thrive. It knows the names of the king's illegitimate children, but cannot tell us the origin of wheat. This is the way of human folly." So, brethren, let's take a look at some of the trends in American agriculture. The average age of the American farmer is 57 years old, and most of their children have little desire to return to the farm. The reason? Why work from sun up to sundown for a low to moderate salary in often dirty and uncomfortable and sometimes dangerous conditions when you could, even with no formal education, work at a job 40 hours per week, clean environment, air conditioning, and benefits for the same and easily more income? Another. Less than 2% of the American population are production agriculturists. That's the technical name for farmers. There are more people in prisons than there are farmers. In Canada, the same trend follows. At the end of 2001, an estimated 313,000 people were primarily employed in agriculture, 26% fewer than in 1998. This was the largest decline in about 35 years, according to the data from the Labor Force Survey. In 1977 alone, 450,000 Americans left farming, continuing a trend that had existed for years. William Jennings Bryan wrote, "Burn down your cities and leave our farms, and your cities will spring up again. But destroy our farms and grass will grow in the streets of every city in the country." 1978, the average size farm in the United States, as reported from Wallace's Farmer, the famed Iowa Farm magazine, stands at about 400 acres, an increase of about 50 acres from the mid-1960s, almost twice the size of farms in 1950. Today, it's about 440 acres. American farms are increasing in large due to the advantage of new machinery. The aftermath, however, of this growth is the loss of an agricultural dowry. In the name of big agriculture, as farms get bigger, people decide they would rather have their neighbor's farm more than they want their neighbor. And to complicate the whole scenario, when a farmer closes his business doors, he or she often closes decades and sometimes generations of family tradition, as well as generations of lessons learned about that piece of land mistakes made, and their remedies. The understanding of agricultural practices, customs, traditions, information about that land that is generally passed from parents to offspring when people leave or sell family farms. 2.8 million American workers produce, process, sell, and trade the nation's food and fiber. But only 960,000 of those people live on farms, slightly less than 2% of the total U.S. population. The other 98 to 99% is making policy for the others. There is an overall loss of relevance for U.S. agriculture. Consumers know they get their food at the grocery store, yet there is a continuing disconnect with agriculture as urban and suburban populations grow. As our elected officials also come from this non-agricultural culture, they have an equally vague idea of what sustainable food production really is. You know, a common story and scenario that we see, particularly in the East, is that we're in a rural area, and a farmer, out of necessity, decides to sell their farm. And because of the value of that country setting, people want to move to the country and to buy up that land and build houses. But once they move in, they complain because of the smell or the activity of the machinery of the nearby farms and begin to put restrictions on the farmers. I'm fond of the bumper stickers that say, "Farmers feed you three times a day," or "Don't criticize a farmer with your mouth full." Farmers have always had a difficult time unifying. We call them all farmers, but there are dairy farmers, beef farmers, pig farmers, and vegetable farmers, cotton farmers, and wheat farmers. And although there are some similarities, some commonalities, there are significant differences and enough variety that where other industries have had success or stayed alive and viable through unions, agricultural organizations have not had the same effect. In one parking lot, I saw two signs. One read, "Gas, $3.69." Another said, "London Broil, $2.69." See, high fuel prices have put considerable pressure on many sectors of the United States economy, but our farmers and agricultural producers are suffering disproportionately. High input costs and the inability to raise prices have left our agricultural sector with limited options. However, as many farmers and producers are rediscovering, energy efficiency is an extremely valuable resource that they can turn to help for during these challenging times. The last trend, consumers spend about $547 billion for food originating on U.S. farms and ranches. Of each dollar spent on food, the farmer's share is about 23 cents. The rest are for costs beyond the farm gate: wages and materials for production, processing, marketing, transportation, and distribution. And I think this is where we'll see some of the most rapid in change that will have the most widespread personal effect on each of us. On the average, every 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, around $6 million in U.S. agricultural products, grains, oil seeds, cotton, meats, vegetables, snack foods, are consigned for shipment for export to foreign markets. In the end, Americans spend only 14% of their money on food. And I believe that's going to change, and we're not going to like it. I'm going to skip past a couple of other trends, because it would be about here, as I'm watching the time go by, that if I were to ask Sister Vicky for some help and after considerable prodding because she wouldn't want to offer a suggestion, I would say, you know, what are these thoughts, needs? And supportively she might say, Well, what effect does that have on my Christian walk? There you go. Thank you, Sister Karen. Well, before we get to that, let me give you the answers to your quiz. A female sheep is a ewe. A young female pig is a gilt. You would harvest that steer at 18 months. There is 3% fresh water on the surface of our planet. The most abundant element in our atmosphere is nitrogen. The letters PTO stand for power takeoff. If green tractors are John Deere, generally a blue one is a Ford. What do we call diseases that can travel from animals to humans or vice versa? They are zoonotic. And we get hardwood from deciduous trees as opposed to softwoods from evergreens. And cattle have a ruminant digestive tract. I don't know what you'd do with that if you got them all right, or what you would do if you got them all wrong. But what can we do? And really, nothing. Nothing. Sometimes just an awareness is a help. If not for the situation, then for your own peace of mind. Our awareness of God's plan helps us to understand and to cope with so many of the current events of our world. 1 Thessalonians 5:3, "For when they shall say peace and safety, then suddenly destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape." In Joel 1:15-20, "Alas for the day of the Lord is at hand, and as a destruction from the Almighty shall it come. Is not the meat cut off before our eyes, yea, joy and gladness from the house of our God? The seed is rotten under the clods, the garners are laid desolate, the barns are broken down, for the corn is withered. How do the beasts groan? The herds of cattle are perplexed because they have no pasture, yea, the flocks of sheep are made desolate. O Lord, to thee will I cry, for the fire hath devoured the pastures of the wilderness, and the flame hath burned all the trees of the field. The beasts of the field cry also unto thee, for the rivers of the waters are dried up, and the fire hath devoured the pastures of the wilderness." In Jeremiah 25:32, "Thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, evil shall go forth from nation to nation, and a great whirlwind shall be raised up from the coasts of the earth." It's a matter of time before the winds are loosed and the whirlwind blows. Revelation 7:1, "And after these things I saw four messengers standing upon the four corners of the land, holding the four winds of the land, that the wind may not blow upon the land, nor upon the sea, nor upon any tree." The suggestion has been that the four winds are economic, religious, political, and social. Where in this whirlwind is agriculture? Probably more so economic, but also has social and political implications. Who and what earthly force will hold back the masses of hungry people when the grocery stores no longer have food? To what level will anarchy draw? The motto of the USDA is the same today as it was 150 years ago. Across the bottom of the official USDA seal are the words, "Agriculture is the foundation of manufacture and commerce." What do? We watch in amazement at the mighty hand of God at work and rest that in His due time, His plan will unfold. 2 Peter 3:10-13, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness? Looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. So many of the scriptural lessons and pictures are based in agricultural examples. As we become more and more disconnected from our source of physical substance, we become less and less in tune with the full impact of these lessons. So yesterday I gave two challenges, so you're not going to have a lot of time. But as time permits, spend some time outside. Plant a garden or visit a garden. Smell the soil. Visit a farm at milking time. Watch or help a farmer bale hay next fall. Raise some sheep. Thomas Jefferson said, "No occupation is so delightful to me as the culture of the earth, and no culture comparable to that of the garden. Though an old man, I am but a young gardener." We are encouraged over and over, as Christians, we should display as much of the graces of Christ's likeness as we can. Gratitude is one of these characteristics. When we walk into a grocery store, or as my mother would call it, the market, pause for a moment for gratitude for the choices that we have. We live as kings and queens. We walk into our markets with commanding choices of meats and fish and cheese and produce from all over the world. And then when we say grace and seek the Lord's blessing on the meal, fully enter into the gratitude for that fact for today. Your sustenance is there, and be grateful for those who toiled to get it to you. God is good. God is great. Let us thank him for our food. By his hand we shall be fed. Thank God for our daily bread. Now this is how Brother Russell ended the chapter, The Cries of the Reapers. Said, "Be you patient then, brethren, till the presence of the Lord, who will adjust matters righteously, lifting up him that is poor and him that hath no helper, in taking vengeance on all evildoers. Behold, the husbandman, anticipating the fruit of the earth, waits patiently for it until he shall receive both the early and the later harvest. Be you also patient. Establish your hearts, because the presence of the Lord has approached. Add not to each other's sorrows, brethren, that ye be not punished also. Behold, the judge is standing at the door." And again, may God add his blessing. Thank you.